This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Buckle your seatbelts, folks. ISIS, the self-proclaimed Islamic State, ISIS wants you. Well, if you follow the dystopian apocalypse talk of the Book of Revelations in the Christian Bible, know something about the number 666, or the four horsemen, the rapture, the Antichrist, all of that, does that mean you would actually join up with some group to make it happen in your lifetime? There are Christian groups that profess such goals, but almost no one believes that the Pope is secretly rooting for them to succeed. Similarly, there are Jewish groups that believe a third Temple of Solomon should be built in Jerusalem to bring on the Messiah. But no one seriously believes that most observant Jews or high-profile figures like Jerry Seinfeld or Jon Stewart or even most Israelis living in Tel Aviv are secretly rooting for that violent outcome. The Obama White House is trying to make this argument about Muslims and groups that call for caliphates in Syria like ISIS or call for attacks on U.S. shopping malls like al-Shabaab in Somalia did over the weekend. President Obama says this is not religious doctrine. It's desperation.
These terrorists are desperate for legitimacy. And all of us have a responsibility to refute the notion that groups like ISIL somehow represent Islam, because that is a falsehood that embraces the terrorist narrative.
Is this doctrine and preaching that's coming out of ISIS, or is it appropriation of a religion for a tactical purpose on the ground in Iraq and Syria? Graham Wood, author of What ISIS Really Wants in the March 2015 issue of The Atlantic, where he's also a contributing editor. Welcome, Graham.
Thank you.
Also with us is Haroon Mogal, a fellow at the Institute of Social Policy and Understanding. Previously, he was the fellow in Muslim Politics and Societies at the Center on National Society at Fordham Law School. And Haroon recently wrote a rebuttal to Graham's piece for Salon. Graham, why don't you begin? Is this religion that's coming out of ISIS?
Well, ISIS is certainly using the trappings of religion, and it's using the same texts that that have existed in Islam for a long time. It's using them very selectively. It has interpretations and methods of interpretation that are extremely unpopular and shared by almost no Muslims other than ISIS. But certainly it's emerging from that tradition, and so I think it would be a mistake to call it totally not Islamic.
But if nobody buys it, what does it matter that it actually uses the words correctly?
It certainly is true that it doesn't represent Islam, but in the same way, the Branch Davidians and David Koresh, they don't represent Christianity. On the other hand, to say that the Branch Davidians are not a Christian sect, I think would be mistaken. And that's really what I was pushing up against, the idea that these people do not have any kind of rationality behind them, that they can't think. That, I think, is a false view of our enemy. And we have to think of them instead as a deviant, kind of heretical Islamic sect, rather than just a bunch of nihilists, thrill-kill types.
Haroon, would you say there is an equivalence between Christian apocalyptic groups, Jewish apocalyptic groups, and Muslim apocalyptic groups? Or do Muslim apocalyptic groups have more of a connection with the religion and the way they're depicted in the media?
I think we're missing the most important part of the equation when it comes to ISIS, and that's the Iraq War. If any country had done to us what we did to Iraq, not since 2003, but since 1980 with the Iran-Iraq War, the Gulf War, the sanctions, invasion, civil war, sectarianism, you would produce apocalyptic groups. It's not surprising to me that a society that is so brutalized and devastated would produce brutes and barbarians. That said, of course, ISIS believes itself to be Islamic and attempts to find legitimacy within the Islamic tradition. But as Graham pointed out, no Muslim other than ISIS believes ISIS represents Islam. They're anathema, not only to Muslims, but to Islamic scholarship.
Graham, do you believe that quietistic Muslims hope secretly for the success of ISIS, or are they just as outraged as everyone else?
As far as I can tell, quietistic Salafis are as foursquare against ISIS as you could possibly get, and on theological grounds, I should point out. As for the rest of Muslims and the vast majority of Muslims who have no interest in ISIS, I think it's almost as ridiculous to ask their opinion of ISIS as it would be to ask your neighborhood Baptist or Methodist about what they thought about the fundamentalist Church of Latter-day Saints or of the Branch Davidians. It's very far from their practice. That said, those churches certainly do share some holy texts, and they are in the holy tradition of Christianity.
Well, then I'm puzzled here. You, in your Atlantic piece, really make the case for treating ISIS seriously as a threat on some level. Yet you're also saying here that maybe the United States government should pay attention to ISIS about as much as the folks in Istanbul pay attention to the branch of Davidians.
You know, I think that we should take very, very careful note of what they think, of what ISIS thinks. And by doing that, we can understand exactly what their project is and exactly how they're appealing to the possibly radicalized people and populations outside of the Islamic State. Now, to acknowledge what they are, to acknowledge the traditions that they draw from, is not to legitimize their appropriation of those traditions. What it is understanding what our enemy is, describing it accurately so we can deal with it. If we went to war, for example, with Nazi Germany and we had no idea what Nazism consisted of, then I think we'd be in an analogous situation to the kinds of military confrontation that we've already chosen against ISIS, really without much knowledge of what they think in detail.
Haroon?
It's important that we take note of ISIS, but I think we're missing the point. And the point is, how have our policies contributed to this sort of movement and this sort of discourse? On the one hand, we're bombing ISIS. On the other hand, we're militarily protecting Saudi Arabia, whose brand of Islam directly leads into ISIS. Saudi Arabia has been a profoundly negative force within the Muslim world. Its brand of Islam is incredibly strident, intolerant, closed-minded, averse to other forms of the Islamic tradition, and emerged in opposition to the Islamic tradition collectively. So we're having this conversation rather self-righteously about how dangerous ISIS is, and as Bernard Haykel, you know, put it in his article rather inaccurately, that ISIS somehow is Islamic, which is an embarrassing conclusion for an academic to make. We're missing the point, and the point is, how do our own policies contribute to instability, and how do extremist groups take advantage of that instability?
But to use the Nazi example that Graham did a moment ago, do we wait for ISIS to invade Belgium before we do something about him?
No, not at all. I think the first thing we need to do when it comes to ISIS is consider how unpopular this movement is. Graham himself says it in his article. This is a movement that has absolutely no allies. Everywhere it goes, it creates opposition to itself. There is no movement in the world as unpopular as ISIS. It cannot survive. You can't build a state formed on this kind of rigidity and intolerance. So ISIS is waiting to fall. The only thing that will allow ISIS to succeed is if authoritarianism in the Middle East keeps throwing oxygen into a fire, so to speak, right? So what we need to do is really think about creating a coalition in the Middle East to contain ISIS. This is not Nazi Germany. This is not a group that has the second largest economy in the world as its primary resource or engine. It controls mostly desolate, uninhabited territory. It has no access to the sea. It has no alliances. It has no ability to produce technology. It's brutal. It's scary. It's dangerous. But let's not go so far as to pretend that this is Nazi Germany or the Soviet Union.
Graham?
We're very lucky that they're not either of those things. ISIS, as Haroon correctly points out, is a very small, poor movement with a base that can't possibly threaten the West in the way that it would like to, and that it says it will in its propaganda. That said, it is an expanding group. It has been arrested in the expansion on its own edges by Kurdish involvement, by the Iraqi Shia. But it's finding allegiance from places like Libya, places like the Caucasus, Afghanistan. And I think the methods of its expansion have to do very much with the way that it conceives itself and its ideology. So understanding exactly how a caliphate expands in their view of what a caliphate is, I think is a very good illustration of the importance of understanding their ideology.
But if I make an argument about a caliphate to someone sitting at a coffee place in Istanbul, they laugh at me. But if I make that argument about a caliphate would be a benefit for your life, if you're in Pakistan and drones are attacking you in your villages, you might actually buy that argument. So the U.S. complicity in making that argument credible is a reasonable one. Graham?
Yeah, that's a very important point in my article, which is that there's a narrative that ISIS has. It's all about burning the middle ground, so especially Muslims have to choose sides, and they have to choose sides between the Islamic State and being some kind of sellout to the West. And that's something that we need to avoid. We need to make sure that narrative is, first of all, not accurate, and second of all, is not popular among the possible recruits for ISIS. And that's why I think it's so dangerous for us to have any kind of very straightforward occupation or invasion of Islamic State territory. If we do that, we will certainly be buying into the line that that ISIS wants to promote to the rest of the world.
But the humanitarian impact of pulling out of the Syrian civil war and the region generally, Haroon, would be an absolute nightmare for millions of people.
Our intervention in the region has generally not gone well. The places where we've used military force generally have suffered. So logic dictates that we proceed very carefully and cautiously and with a degree of humility with respect to how much we can really accomplish. This is a problem the region has to figure out for itself. We can't simply swoop in, bomb people, and walk away and expect that the problem will simply go away. There are internal causes for ISIS as well. And there is a need for people in the region to figure out their own model of inclusive politics, and that's not happening. One of the reasons why it's so hard to find a clear position in the Muslim world on what to do about ISIS is that the people who are opposing ISIS are just as brutal, if not more so. They may not threaten the West, but with respect to Muslims, they've killed far more. So on the one hand, you have ISIS. On the other hand, you have the Assad administration and its Iranian backers who are engaged in ethnic cleansing against Sunni populations. So it's a case of a rock and a hard place. You're stuck between terrorism and authoritarianism. And in that environment, if there isn't an inclusive politics, it's going to be constant civil war. And the United States cannot force Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Syria, Iraq, so on and so forth, to build governments that include the diversity of their people. That's their challenge.
Some common ground here, Graham Wood?
Yes, certainly. I think that it's very important to understand that ISIS is a movement with its own self-destruction probably written within its constitution. You know, the ISIS does not have popularity outside of its territory. And very quickly, I think it will be, instead of an expanding caliphate of its propaganda, a pathetic and stagnating one. And that's really what we want. If we can dispel their narratives and show that they are not what they claim to be, then we're very much on the right page. And understanding that's going to be, of course, complicated, and it will require us to understand how Bashar al-Assad's government is related to all this. But certainly understanding the self-conception of ISIS is going to be part of it, too.
Our mission, finding common ground between Graham Wood, author of What ISIS Really Wants in the March 2015 issue of The Atlantic, and Haroon Mogul, a fellow at the Institute of Social Policy and Understanding, who wrote a rebuttal of that piece for Salon. Haroon and Graham, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.